As far as where we are in our lesson book, we're in chapter 28, and it's just a list of the kings. So we're up to we spoke last week about Amaziah here, and we'll continue to speak about him a little bit and progress through his reign and his interactions with Jehoash of Israel. All right, so once again, let's remind ourselves of where we are and where they are and all that sort of stuff. So we're here in the United States on the West Coast, and we're way out here in the desert. That's us there. And then if we head on out into space and back over again, you'll note that we are about halfway around the world when we get into what I've labeled the Bible lands. And of course, we just call those the Bible lands because they're mostly the lands that are spoken of in the Bible. Makes sense. Obviously, this is not a comprehensive look at all the lands that are in the Bible, but the one that we're mostly concerned about is the land of Israel. And so as we look at the land of Israel a bit, we see that we've got a couple of bodies of water here. Which is this one up here in the north? Sea of Galilee. And then this big one down here in the south? The Dead Sea. There was a little one right here. What was it called?
Lake Hula.
Lake Hula. It's since been filled in and is used as an agricultural area. What's this tiny body of water out here? Mediterranean. All right. And as we look at some of the lands from the New Testament era, then we realize that this is... What's this island out here? Someone said it. What? Crete. Right? Isn't that where... That's where they went, right? Cyprus is the other one that's over here somewhere. That one. I don't think Cyprus is... Is Cyprus mentioned in the New Testament at all? It might be on part of the journey.
Is that where
Fair Havens was?
Yeah.
Yeah. In there somewhere. So... And then, of course, Italy way over here, so... Pardon?
That is Cyprus.
Okay.
Yeah,
sorry.
Crete.
I always get them mixed up.
You're trying to trick me.
They both begin with a K, you see, so it's...
Exactly.
Yeah. So, anyway, yeah. Let me... If I turn the, what is it, borders and labels or places back on, maybe it'll actually tell me that. But anyway.
Yeah.
Yeah, the other one. Yeah. Cyprus. There we go. It even says so now that I turned everything on. Cyprus today is the one that's divided between Greece and Turkey.
So that's the Greek letter K that that's
mentioned? Yeah, it's the Greek letter K, right.
Kappa.
All right. So anyway, so that's where we are these days. And as we're talking about the kings that we're concerned about now, the kings of Israel and Judah, then we realize it sort of divides this land in half. And Israel, of course, has all this area up here, and Judah has this area down here, and a lot of desert down here. So that's not really all that habitable. So, but for the vast majority of their time, the people of Israel, after they came into the promised land, lived in this area here. And a bit over here. Even though King David and Solomon, their territories, their control went all the way up to the Euphrates River, which is up here somewhere, and not going to bother to find it, and went all the way down to the river of Egypt, sort of right down here. So they actually controlled a fairly large area. But they only lived in a relatively small area in that. Now, as we get down here to, once again, chapter... You be quiet. So we get back down here to chapter 28. Let me see if I can make this just a little bit. I mean, obviously, you've got this in your book. Don't do that. Stop it. right. So we're on this chart here is on page 109 in your book. So we're concerned about this page that starts 109. We've already done away with King Joash here. And we see that that Joash is no longer in command. Amaziah is, and we see that in the second year of Jehoash of Israel, or Joash of Israel, who was king for 16 years, in his second year, then Amaziah started, and he reigned for 29 years. And in the 15th year of Amaziah, then King Jeroboam, who was actually the second King Jeroboam, he started to reign there in Israel. But what we want to look at is some of the text regarding Amaziah, because that's where we were last time. And as we look at this, we realize that we're sort of flip-flopping between 2 Chronicles 25 and 2 Kings 14. I keep forgetting which one is more extensive. I believe the one in the recitation in 2 Chronicles 25 is more extensive than that in 2 Kings 14. So it goes on a bit longer. So if we look at 2 Chronicles 25, for example, we've already talked about the fact that Amaziah was 25 years old when he began, that he reigned 29 years in his mother's name, and all that. He did that which was right in the eyes of Jehovah, but not with a perfect heart. Later on, in the area where we're studying right now, what is it particularly that he did not with a perfect heart? What had he done? What did we talk about last week?
Amaziah.
Idolatry. What did he do, Lynn?
He brought back the gods of the sons of Seir.
Okay, right. They had gone down to fight against the Edomites, or as it says, the sons of Seir in the text here, and they had won. And they had won why? Why did they win?
Because God was on their side.
Right, because God promised them. As a matter of fact, this is where he had all of the folks that he got together from Judah, right? And then what else did he do?
He
hired a bunch of mercenaries from Israel. Paid them 100 shekels or whatever, or 100 talents. One of those kinds of money. And paid them that to have a number of warriors from Israel. And then what happened with those warriors from Israel? No, they didn't go to the other side.
Well,
why did they get angry?
He was told to send them back.
Right.
Yeah.
So a prophet, what? Go ahead.
God was not with them. So somebody came up to the king and said, do not use the people of Israel, right? The soldiers of Israel.
Yep.
God is not with them.
Right.
So he kind of sent them packing. He actually listened to it, which is pretty...
Yeah. Hard to believe, especially given what happened later on. So we see here in verse 6 of 2 Chronicles 25, he hired 100,000 mighty men of valor out of Israel for 100 talents of silver. And then a prophet came down. It says a man of God came to him. Doesn't identify who it is, but he came to him and said that God will cast you down before the enemy. God has the power to help and to cast down. So now notice he says that let not the army of Israel go with thee, for Jehovah is not with Israel, to wit, with all the children of Ephraim. I was going to look this up and I didn't. Maybe somebody has studied it before. But I do note that in the Bible, in a number of instances, they use the word Ephraim to refer to the entire northern kingdom of Israel. So it doesn't necessarily mean just there is a tribe of Ephraim, right? Yeah. Ephraim and Manasseh, right? So those were the two sons of Joseph. It's interesting to note that after a while, it appears that at least in some instances, the word Ephraim is sort of a generic reference to the entire northern kingdom of Israel. It's not universal, but I think what it was is that after a while, God appeared to use the word Israel simply to refer to his chosen people, and he used Ephraim to refer to those people that were of the northern kingdom. Once again, I say it's not particularly universal, but I think we even notice it in references in the New Testament. So, anyway, those people, it says there in verse 7, Jehovah is not with Israel. And so that's why he told them to, Amaziah to send them back. And he said, well, what are we going to do about the 100 talents of that they've given to him? And as I mentioned last week, that's just the cost of doing business. So, yeah, you're going to have to forfeit that. He's not going to ask for a refund. I'm not sure that they would have given it to him, given their attitude anyway. So, so he sent them home. It says at the end of verse 10 that they returned in fierce anger. So, why was it that they were angry?
Probably because if they had gone to war and they had won, they probably would have gotten a bunch of spoils. So.
That's right. There's probably more than just that 100 talents that they had gotten. Plus, there's a certain amount, we see it throughout, that there's a certain amount of honor that these people feel that they possess. And they've been called upon to go out and battle with the Edomites, and they don't like these people anyway, so they're more than happy to do that, especially since they got paid, and especially since they're going to get more if they plunder their land. So they went away mad, probably for a number of reasons. But anyway, he went down, it says, to the Valley of Salt. The Valley of Salt, I believe, has been mentioned before when Abraham was looking down toward Sodom and Gomorrah and looking down to where Lot went. And I believe that was referred to at that time as the Valley of Salt. But the Valley of Salt is mentioned one or two other times in the Old Testament. So it says that he smote 10,000 of Seir. And then also he took another 10,000, it says, and pushed them off a cliff. I'm not sure what the meaning of all this is, but apparently that indicates that they were less than friendly with one another. So, excuse me, they were all broken in pieces, it says. Now, it says here that the army, right, in verse 13, now, the army that Amaziah sent back, in other words, the people of Israel, how many were there? 4? 17? 100,000. Okay. So, apparently they hired 100,000 people out of Israel to do battle for them, and God told them no. And they were so mad, however, that they decided that they would just take what they want from the cities of Judah. So, as it says in verse 13, it says that they fell upon the cities of Judah, from Samaria even unto Beth Horon, and smote of them 3,000, and took much spoil. So they killed 3,000 of the people from Judah, though Samaria actually isn't in Judah, and they took a lot of spoil. So they got payment for, they got the 100 talents anyway. They didn't have to fight the Edomites, and so they didn't have to go through that long march down to Edom. But they took advantage of the fact that they were all together and decided they'd go ahead and plunder a bunch of cities in Judah. And we'll see in just a few minutes here that that wasn't taken very favorably by Amaziah. And we'll see that this sort of leads to the end of Amaziah anyway. So they did that. And then in verse 14, we come back essentially to the story of Amaziah. We had this sort of a parenthetical expression in verse 13 about what the returned soldiers had done. But it says that when Amaziah came back from the slaughter of the Edomites, that he brought the gods of the children of Seir and set them up to be his gods. And he bowed down himself before them and burned incense unto them. Now, When it came time for, I don't know whether it was Nebuchadnezzar or the Assyrian king. You remember when they came down and they started encamping against Jerusalem, and their representative said, hey, we defeated all of these other cities. Their gods didn't help them. And how's your God going to help you if none of these other gods help them? And so, you know, that's sort of a point to be taken, that all of those other cities that they took plunder from, or that they destroyed or took captives or whatever they did in Israel and Judah, that they all had, well, and in other countries other than Israel and Judah, they all had gods, and their gods didn't do them any good. I think it was during the time of Hezekiah, I think it was, that this was said. I didn't research that, so I'd have to look at it again. But the fact of the matter is, it wasn't until they met the God of heaven that they found out that the God could do something to do that. I think this is where, as Mickey says, 186,000 of them woke up dead, right? Isn't that the one? And then the king went back to his hometown and his sons killed him. Yeah, so not a very great ending right there. But anyway, the thing is that Amaziah went down and he destroyed a number of the Edomites. And so it's obvious that their gods didn't help them. Certainly, Amaziah knew that there was only supposed to be one God. And as a matter of fact, he relied on him previously. In other words, he did send 100,000 men back at the demand of God, as it were. And then he goes down there. He kills all these people. It's obvious that their gods didn't do a whole lot to help him, but they brought him back anyway and decided that they would worship them. It reminds me much of the one further on in the Old Testament. Maybe Chris, you'll remember what this is, where where it talks about the fact that they hew down a piece of wood and they chop it up and use it to build things, and then they also use it to make a fire so that they can cook their dinner, and then later on with what's left, they fashion a god out of it and bow down and worship it. They go, is it Isaiah? Is it okay? Isaiah 40 or something like that? Okay. I know it's on the right-hand page in the left-hand column, about a third of the way down.
44. Yeah, starting about verse 9, and then starting again, and yeah, about verse 9.
Yeah.
And then you find Psalm 115 and Psalm 135.
Psalm 115 and Psalm 135? Okay. If we... in verse 15 of Isaiah 44... It says, then shall it be for a man to burn. In other words, he's talking about the tree that he planted that grew up and rain nourishes it. And shall be for a man to burn, and he taketh thereof and warmeth himself. Yea, he kindleth it and baketh bread. Yea, he maketh a god and worshipeth it and maketh it a graven image and falleth down thereto. He burneth part thereof in the fire, with part thereof he eateth flesh. He roasteth and is satisfied. Yea, he warmeth himself and saith, aha, I am warm. I have seen the fire, and the residue thereof he maketh a god, even his graven image. He falleth down unto it, and worshipeth, and prayeth unto it, and saith, deliver me, for thou art my God. It's beyond me how people can come to this conclusion. It's just incredible. He planted the tree. The tree grew up. It says that the rain watered it. It grew up. He cut it down. He did all of these things with it, and then after he did all these things with it, he decided that this is my God, and I'm going to worship you. What is it in, Chris, did you say in Psalms what?
135.
You have it there? You want to read that then?
You want me to read that?
Please.
The idols of the nations of the silver and gold, the work of man's hands, they have mouths, but they do not speak, they have eyes, but they do not see, they have ears, but they do not hear. Nor is any breath in their at all in their mouths. Those who make them will be like them. Yes, they're going to trust them.
Okay. So there in Psalms 135, verses 15 through 18, it talks essentially the same. They don't have mouth. They have mouths, but they don't speak. They have eyes, but they don't see. They have ears, but they don't hear, and so on. And we see that this is the work of men's hands. And then we can look back, for example, at examples when Saul was king in the United Kingdom, and the Ark of the Covenant was taken. Ark of the Covenant was taken by whom? From King Saul, by the Philistines, right? And they took it, and they took it to Gath, right? Their sort of their chief city. And where did they put it?
In Dagon's house.
And what old Dagon do? He fell down. Matter of fact, it looked like he was worshiping before the Ark of the Covenant. So they set him back up because obviously, you know, something had made him fall down and was their fault. They set him back up and they came in the next day, and what had happened? Fell down and broke that time. His hands came off, and I think his head came off, right? And so they sort of took this as a sign that Dagon wasn't helping them a whole lot. And the Ark of the Covenant was something they didn't want to have around. So now they started carting it around to other cities, and the other cities of the Philistines started getting diseases much like they did. It's interesting to note what the people do here. They see the miracles, they see the power of the God of heaven, yet they continue to revere idols of wood and silver and gold and all these things. I guess to a certain extent, we do that ourselves because, you know, the New Testament talks about the fact that covetousness is idolatry. And so we have a tendency to do that, to covet money and other possessions. And perhaps we can say that to a certain extent, we are like them. Hopefully we try to stay away from that. Anyway, in verse 14, then it says that he killed a bunch of the Edomites and then took their gods back and started worshiping them. They had already, many of them were already worshiping other gods by that time, even in Judah. Now, however, in verse 15, it says that the anger of God was kindled against Amaziah. And he sends another prophet. Whereas a few verses above said send him a man of God, here it says that he sent him a prophet in verse 15. Why have you sought after the gods of other people, he said, who have not delivered these people out of the hands, out of your hand? what? Randy?
I was going to say, that really is the key question there. You know, you just conquered these people. Their gods didn't protect them.
What are you doing?
Now you're throwing out your God who delivered you.
Yeah.
Worshiping their gods who couldn't deliver them.
Right. So, we have a prophet of God that's talking to Amaziah, who apparently doesn't have anything good to say to Amaziah. So, what does Amaziah do that's similar to what other people have done? He threatens the prophet. He says, get out of here or I'm going to kill you. So, well, we saw that happen a couple of times in Israel with Micaiah, I believe. He was the one that was thrown in the pit, I think. Or was it that one of the unidentified prophets? But anyway, one of them was thrown in the pit and said, the king said, I'll take care of you when I come back. And the prophet said, if you can come back, then I'm not a prophet. And he didn't come back. Micaiah and Ahab, yeah. Ahab didn't get along with a lot of people of God very well. So in verse 16 it said that the king said, have we made you the king's counsel? Get lost. So the prophet quit speaking and just concluded with, I know that God's determined to destroy you because you've done this and have not hearkened unto my counsel. Now here in verse 17 of 2 Chronicles is where we have a parallel with 2 Kings, the 14th chapter. If you look at 2 Kings, the 14th chapter and verse 8, we see here that in 2 Kings it says, then Amaziah sent messengers to Jehoash, the son of Jehoahaz, son of Jehu, king of Israel, saying, come, let us look one another in the face. And if we look at the 2 Chronicles 25 and 17, then Amaziah, king of Judah, took advice and sent to Joash, the son of Jehoahaz, the son of Jehu, king of Israel, saying, come, let us look one another in the face. So we have this. Now, is this similar to the story that we had earlier where it said, and at the time of the year when the kings went out to battle, they came together? What had just happened to Judah by Israel? Right. So those 100,000 people that Amaziah had hired decided that they would raid cities in Judah. And it says that they killed 3,000 people and they took much spoil. So this is not just I'm going to challenge you, king, because you know, I don't like Israel. I think it probably most likely has to do with the fact that Amaziah gets back with his new gods. He gets back and realizes that Israel has raided Judah and killed people and taken spoil. And so he sends a challenge to King Joash and says, let's look one another in the face. So this isn't just a kings challenging each other for fun. This is because that there was retribution that needed to be paid. So 2 Kings 14 and 2 Chronicles 25 essentially say the same thing. But Joash, the king of Israel, he replied to Amaziah and saying with this riddle about the thistle that was in Lebanon, sent to the cedar that was in Lebanon, saying, give thy daughter to my son to wife. And there passed a wild beast that was in Lebanon and trod down the thistle. I'm unclear exactly what that's supposed to mean, but I think what it means is that Amaziah is the thistle Joash is the cedar, and he's going to trod down this thistle known as Amaziah. So Joash says, the only reason that you're doing all this and sending me this challenge is because you've just battled Edom and you won. And now your heart, it says, lifts up to boast for the things that you've done. He says, stay at home. Why should you meddle to your hurt? So Joash does not have what you might say the fear of God put in him, but because Amaziah says, we're going to come up and we're going to destroy you. Let's go meet one another. Why should you meddle to your hurt, and that thou should fall, even thou and Judah with thee, in verse 19. Now, what did the prophet say? The one that he was going to kill if he didn't shut up. Just a couple verses before. That's right. So right at the middle of verse 16, it says, and the prophet forbear, in other words, quit speaking with Amaziah, and said, I know that God hath determined to destroy thee, because thou hast done this, and hast not hearkened unto my counsel. And so the next thing we've got is that they're going to go into battle against one another. So it's possible, though it's not specifically prophesied here, it's possible that Amaziah is going to fight with Joash, and Amaziah is going to lose because it's been just recently prophesied that he's going to die. So Amaziah wasn't interested in listening to that, mainly perhaps because he had just finished defeating the Edomites, so he could defeat anybody, I suppose. But Amaziah wouldn't hear it. It says, what does it say there in verse 20 in the New American?
But Amaziah would not listen, for it was from God, that he might deliver them into the hand of Joash, because they had sought the gods of Edom.
Right. So here we see that the prophecy of the prophet in verse 15 and 16, but specifically in 16, is actually the fulfillment of that, because it says in verse 20, for as was just read, it was of God that he might deliver them to the hand of the enemies because they had sought after the gods of Edom. And it was for the purpose that the prophet had said that they're going to do this. Juan.
So, I bet you Amaziah, well, I mean, you know, it's all speculation, right? But he goes and he's about to go to war. Someone comes up to him and says, don't take those people of Israel because God's not with them. So then he's like, all right, well, I won't take them. And then he goes to Edom and he destroys them. And he comes back, probably sees what all has happened. He goes, well, I know God's not with them, so, and he was with me because I destroyed this other thing. And probably went back up saying, well, I know they're not with them.
He's thinking big now because, yeah, because God is with him. It's just incredible that he would think that Jehovah, the God of heaven, is with him and yet adopt the idols of the Edomites. What's with that? Does he need more insurance? Is that what he's trying to think of here? Is that, well, I need to, you know, up the value of my policy here, or what? You know, the thing is that he says that as Juan has pointed out, that it's very likely that Amaziah was thinking, well, God has blessed me. I mean, he told me to send the people back. I sent them back. We went down there. We won against the Edomites. And, you know, so now I'm gonna go smash up Joash because his people did this to me. He feels he's invincible. But as is said here, it says that in verse 20, it was of God that he might deliver him into the hand of their enemies because they had sought after the gods of Edom. And that's a no-no. You know, we don't want to seek after the gods of Edom. Once again, it's back to our principle of what? If we follow after God, God will be with us. If we fail to follow after God, then God will destroy us off this land that he has given us. So it says in verse 21 that Joash, the king of Israel, went up, and he and Amaziah, king of Judah, looked one another in the face at Beth Shemesh, which belongeth to Judah. Juan.
I look at this and I think too that God wasn't asking a lot of Amaziah at this point in time. It wasn't like he had to do a million things to get God on his side. It was that he just didn't follow somebody else. And he even gave him warning, like he had prophets coming to him saying, you shouldn't be doing this. And he's still like, no. So it's not even like God was asking a lot from him at this point. It doesn't even seem like he was asking for much besides to get rid of the idols, which wouldn't have been that hard. The idols that he brought back, so it would have been like, okay, well, I'll destroy them now and be good. But no, he's just...
It's not like he's trying to put him through the seven trials of Hercules, right? It's, you know, it's... Was it seven or three? But anyway. you know, he's not asking Amaziah to really do anything but obey me. He's not saying, well, you know, go out and, you know, beat up the Assyrians and go down here and have war with the Egyptians and, you know, get in boats and go over to Spain and conquer the Spaniards or anything like that. He's just saying, believe in me and do what I'm asking you to do. But he can't even do that. So, I don't know. It may be similar to what we do today. You know, God says it's really very simple. Just do the things that I ask of you and everything will be fine. And then we do the things that we want to do. Looks like your hand is almost up. Did you want to say something?
I think... Now, verse 19 explains the problem in that what the problem was, it was pride. It was arrogance.
Pride and arrogance.
You know, and that's, you know, why do we get in trouble today? Well, my pride gets better. And in fact, you know, go back to verse 2, and it says that he did it right in the sight of the Lord, but he didn't do it with a whole heart. Evidently, but the other part of his heart that wasn't devoted to God was devoted to himself. It was his pride. And as we'll get to Hezekiah, it's said Hezekiah also, but that was his pride.
Oh, yeah. So, yeah, pride will do it to all of us and has done and will continue to do so. And this is not the first time, of course, that people have done this and have decided not to follow God simply because they were prideful or felt them. that they themselves had a better answer than what God had. There's just what Amaziah and the folks of Judah are doing reminds me of what the people of later on of Samaria did, is that they put those people there to take the place of the Israelites that were taken away, and you know the lions started eating up on them and things like that. They said, well, we need a priest, to tell us what to do. And so it says that they worship God and they continue to worship their own gods. They want to have all the gods. Why they want to have this, I don't know, since it's only the one God that's actually shown them any power. And they apparently fail on a regular basis to see this, that indeed it is just the God Jehovah, the God of heaven, that has the power, that has done the things that deliver his people or punish his people. The other gods just sit there mute and fall over on their faces. It's just amazing. But that's the way it's happened so far. So they looked one another in the face at Bet Shemesh. I didn't look to see if we had a map that showed where Bet Shemesh is. It says it's in Judah. So I'm thinking this since it's
108.
So your map on page 108 shows where Bet Shemesh is. Or you could go to the 107 and color it all in, which is probably not as helpful. So, where is it, Carolyn?
Near the western.
Oh, there it
near
is.
The northwestern.
All right, so a little bit to the south and west of Jerusalem. A lot to the west and a little bit to the south of Jerusalem. Probably, what does it look like, 20 miles maybe? 20, 25 miles from Jerusalem to Bet Shemesh. So they're actually well inside of the tribal territory of Judah where they're doing this. And, of course, I do have the map right here. I think it's right there it is. Is that easy to see there? All right. So I have it expanded right now. So you'll see right here is the Dead Sea. And here's Bet Shemesh right here. Here's Jerusalem. So this is the border here, essentially, with Israel, and Judah down here. So Bethel and Mizpah, which are on either side of the border. The king of Israel then came down and met the king of Jerusalem, the king of Judah, down here at Bet Shemesh. And so, this was even after the king of Israel, Joash, said, don't do it, because I'm going to conquer you, as it were. It's just not in his best interest. He wouldn't listen. Verse 20 says, of course, he wouldn't hear. And so they did this. It says, and Judah was put to the worst before Israel, and they fled every man to his tent. So it's like the army just dispersed. Now, when he was going to go down to Edom, I think they had, 300,000 people. So one would think that they had a similar army at this time to fight against Joash. But apparently things just did not go well for them at all. And of course, this was, as it says, is of God. And so they, it says, fled every man to his tent. Now, it says here that Joash, the king of Israel, took Amaziah, the king of Judah. So now we see that the king of Israel essentially has captured the king of Judah, the son of Joash, the son of Jehoahaz, at Bet Shemesh, and brought him to Jerusalem. So he brought him to his own capital city, and he broke down the wall of Jerusalem from the gate of Ephraim unto the corner gate 400 cubits. How much is 400 cubits approximately, as far as we know? 600 feet? About 600 feet. Two football fields, right. Yeah, 300 feet in a football field. So two football fields length. He just broke down the wall of Jerusalem. Didn't say that he destroyed it. It just broke down the wall, the gate from Ephraim. So he took all the gold and the silver and all the vessels that were in the house of God with Obed-Edom, and the treasures of the king's house, hostages too, and he returned to Samaria. So that didn't go very well for Amaziah at all. So then we just go on to, well, you know, that's kind of the end of that story. We're going on to the next story now. So it says now Amaziah, the one who was taken and brought back to his city and was allowed to watch the king of Israel plunder his city and destroy the wall, a good portion of the wall, says, lived after the death of Joash, son of Jehoahaz, king of Israel, 15 years. So it is obvious then that Joash did not kill Amaziah. And as a matter of fact, Joash himself didn't live much longer after this. And he died. And Amaziah continued to reign in Judah for 15 years. But really, now they've broken into Jerusalem. They've destroyed a lot of the wall. They've taken all the treasures out of the temple and out of the king's house and all of that. They've taken hostages and they've gone off to there. Now in verse 26 it says, now the rest of the acts of Amaziah, first and last, behold, are they not written in the book of the kings of Judah and Israel? Now notice we're in the book of 2 Chronicles, and so in 2 Kings 14 we have, you know, the rest of the story, as it were, actually a more shortened version of this. Now from the time that Amaziah had to turn away from following Jehovah, they made a conspiracy against him in Jerusalem, and he fled to Lachish, but they sent after him to Lachish and slew him there. So it says from the time that Amaziah turned away from following Jehovah, so it looks like this plot has been a ruin for about 15 years or so, because that would be the identifiable time when he really for sure turned away from God. Because that's when he took up the idols from the Edomites. So they plotted against him. They plotted against him, and they sent after him. It says to Lachish. Did anybody look at the map to see where Lachish is?
Well, to the southwest of Beth
Shemesh. Yeah. So look south and a little bit to the west of Beth Shemesh, and you'll see Lachish. So right here. So there's Jerusalem up here. Here's Lachish down here. Lachish about 50-ish miles from Jerusalem from the looks of things. And so they took him down to there and killed him. So but the plot had been going on for quite a while, because it says from, whoops, did I do that? That was interesting. It says from the time that Amaziah had turned away from following Jehovah. So it says at the beginning of Amaziah's story that yes, he was following God, but not with a perfect heart. So I think that sort of refers to kind of the rest of his life. But he sure made sure that he wasn't following God when he brought the idols back from Edom. So it looks like that people were sort of fed up with him for quite a while. If he reigned for, what was it, 29 years? Is that the one? Right? He reigned for 29 years, and 15 of those years the people were plotting against him. Let me see. He was not plotted against for only 14 years of his 29-year reign. So anyway, they killed him. They brought him upon horses and buried him with his fathers in the city of Judah. The city of Judah generally would mean Jerusalem. All right. So that kind of does away with King Amaziah. I think if we look over here in 2 Kings 14, starting in verse 8, here we have once again the recitation of the battle between Jehoash and Amaziah. The fact that there's the cedar and the thistle and all that sort of stuff. Your heart's lifted up because you smote Edom. Amaziah wouldn't hear it. They looked at they battled in Bet Shemesh. Israel was put, or Judah was put to the worst. They fled. Took him down there. Broke down the wall of Jerusalem to 400 cubits. Took all the gold and silver and so on. So that the discussion here is almost exactly the same as it is in Second Chronicles. And then it talks about the rest of the acts of Jehoash, which he did, and that's what it did in Chronicles also. After we see what happened with the battle between them, we talk about the rest of Jehoash, how he fought with Amaziah, king of Judah, and they written in the book of the Chronicles, and we saw that. And then it says that Jehoash slept with his fathers, buried in Samaria with the kings of Israel, and Jeroboam his son reigned in his stead. Now, of course, we've seen Jeroboam before. When did we see Jeroboam previously? The first king of Israel, right. First king of the divided kingdom of Israel. And so now there's another king, Jeroboam, and we refer to him as Jeroboam the Second, even though the scriptures don't refer to him as Jeroboam the Second, just refer to him as Jeroboam. So, but notice that it says once again here in the book of Kings that Amaziah lived after the death of Jehoash, son of Jehoahaz, king of Israel, 15 years. And they talk about, now they're getting... The writer here is talking about the rest of the acts of Amaziah and a conspiracy against him in Jerusalem. He fled to Lachish, but they sent after him to Lachish and slew him there. They brought him, he was buried at Jerusalem with his fathers in the city of David. Okay, so whereas Second Chronicles said he was buried in the city of Judah, here it says he was buried at Jerusalem with his fathers in the city of David. All right, so Sunday, let's start up then with what's his name? Where did it go?
Jeroboam.
Yeah, I just lost it. Here we go. People took of Judah took Azariah, who was 16, made him king in the room of his father Amaziah. Okay, so 2 Kings 14. Starting in about verse 21, and 2 Chronicles 26 starting.